CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, baby, it's a little Post Malone and Circles. That's very nice. And I hope your day is off to an awesome start. This is Wednesday. Mr. Schmangles says he should stop smoking weed so early in the morning. But, dude, Gord does, so why the hell should you stop? Do what you want. I mean, you're in lockdown at home, right? So what the hell? All bets are off. Do whatever you want. It is Wednesday morning. It's the 25th of November already, so exactly a month to Christmas. And there's Black Friday this weekend. People are excited about that.
What?
I know, a month to Christmas, Sia. Are you excited?
Oh, okay. So part of what my sister and I were talking about yesterday was detailing exactly what we're going to do for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And so what we've now decided is for each person to get to have their own specific day during the holidays where they can do uh-huh. something. So I'm tasked with the theme for Christmas Eve dinner.
Oh, yes.
Spectacular, if I do say so myself.
What is your theme, Sia? Let us know.
Are you ready for it? Okay.
I'm ready. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets. To the sound of the beat. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. All right, go for it, Sia. What is it?
My theme is, it's Sia's favorite things.
Oh, that's such a thoughtful theme for everybody.
That's all my favorite things.
You are a dreadful person because you stole that straight out of Oprah Winfrey.
No. It's not.
It
gets even more dreadful. I have actually been chatting to a friend of mine who is a graphic designer. I'm like, could you incorporate an S to the Oprah O logo and to see if I can get some branding printed out as well? So yeah, I'm doing my favorite.
You want to be Oprah? Or can you just put an S anywhere in it? Could you be like Oprah.
I always thought it was very funny the way that some people said Oprah, O-P-H, because you know P-H can sometimes be an F. So Oprah. Fantastic.
No, but I said it will be so nauseating. My family will probably just roll their eyes through everything, but I don't care. It's Sia's favorite things. That's
my
thing.
God, you're such a narcissist.
I've been told for a lot of my life, Bakulani, I never knew if he was having me on or not, but that like among black folk, Sean Connery was more commonly known as Sean Connery. Is that true, or is that just him taking the piss? Sean Connery is the staring of James Bond. Like, Kennedy just says, like, a lot of black dudes just think Sean Connery's name is Sean Connery. And I always thought it was funny, but I never knew if he was just taking the piss and having me on.
I hope that's true. I really hope that's true. Right, that's so great. Sean Connery.
Because if Ofra and Sean Connery were in a thing together.
Oh, it would be so good.
That would be a hell of a movie.
I really hope that's true about Sean Connery.
I watched an old interview of his, you know, just after his death, and then the fact that he believed in slapping women was a thing.
Yeah, he was a bit rough back in the day.
So I said, you know, I want to hear this for myself. So I watched an interview, and he unashamedly owned it. It was with Barbara Walters.
Mm.
And he said, yeah, well, I believe in it. You know, you just have to every once in a while. I'm not saying I do it all the time, but you know, sometimes you just got to put a woman in her place.
Sometimes she gets out of her pants and she starts to behave like a badly behaved woman, and you sometimes just have to put her in her place again with a smack.
And then, yeah, I even remember watching that and being like, no, I'm not so sure about this anymore. I kind of dig him, and I wish I didn't know about this.
The kicker, though, was when Barbara Walters ended the interview, she looked straight into camera and she says, and Sean Connery has been married for more than 20 years, and we still have yet to hear a peep from her, from his wife. I'm thinking, like, what are you trying to say, Barbara? Shame on you. So, like, she's basically abused to the point where she keeps quiet. It's a shame.
Well, let me tell you something about Sean Connery. The guy worked damn hard when he was younger. He became an actor much later in life, and when he was a young man, he did a number of jobs, including coffin polishing. He polished coffins in a big warehouse, and because he had no money, he slept in one of the coffins over a few nights because he just had nowhere to stay. So he got
in. That's where he got his vampiric powers. I can't do a good Sean Connery. I just sounded like a vampire.
He got into the coffin and had a sleep in there over a few nights because he just had nowhere else to stay. And he worked hard. He got good money for polishing those coffins. And, you know, he was a Mr. Scotland. You know, he entered the Mr. Scotland contest or pageant or whatever you want to call it. And he won that. And his whole world was Scotland.
Winning Mr. Scotland is a bit like being the fastest runner in the obese Olympics.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to Sean Connery, Scotland was everything. He loved Scotland. He refused to go back
here. I just mean being the handsomest man in Scotland.
He was
Scottish men.
He was a member of the Scottish National Party, and he said he reportedly was very against. He had this beautiful house in the French Riviera, which actually you can find pictures of on the internet if you're going to have a look. Just beautiful, like looking right over. I don't know if it's Juan Lapin or. Nice, or whether he's on that really beautiful Corniche Road, but it's the most magic view. And he lived there because he refused to go back to Scotland until they had their own parliament. He was like a proper Scottish nationalist.
I don't want to live in a country that still has the British in control.
Didn't like it at all.
Well, I thought it would be very cool if we put on like a nationwide jaw that happens over the entire country at the same time and just call it the National Party.
That would be hilarious. I would join that party. That would be fun.
That would be fantastic.
I don't think anyone's having parties like that for New Year this year. I think Times Square is probably going to be shut. It's going to be very depressing New Year for people who like a big, massive jaw. So I think put that out of your head, right?
Look,
now.
I'm not a Grinch about it at all. I get it. I mean, I've had many times in my life had massive, massive jaws on New Year. But I've always, even younger when I wasn't being an old grumpy man, found that like there are 364 other jaw opportunities in the year. New Year's tends to be either too much hype or you overjaw, or it just costs you a lot more to do like a big jaw that you could do at another time. So I don't like bemoan people going big on New Year, but for me, New Year always feels like a mission. Like, oh God, do I have to?
Yeah,
a bachelor's or a 40th that you're not keen to go to where you know everyone's going to be partying really hard and you're going to kind of have to as well.
I feel the same way, and I don't build it up in my head. I don't think that New Year needs to be especially important. And I know for a lot of people it is, and it's symbolic. I just want those people to think back on how they felt at midnight on 2019's 31st of December. And they thought, 2020 is going to be the best year. Because I know I said that.
And yeah, then, no, I mean, I'm really not crapping on New Year's jaws. I'm just saying for me, I'll jaw another time.
Well, I want to talk about something else I thought about yesterday. I watched the news, which is a bad idea. You should never watch the news. But I thought about something. I watched these people in, I think it was in Nyanga in Cape Town, just being very violent with each other, you know, like throwing rocks at each other. And there was some child screaming. And I just, whenever I watch the news, I get very, very upset because I see how humans actually treat each other. And it's not the way that we present ourselves to each other. You know, we say, very civilized people. We're not. Human beings, by and large, are pretty mean to each other. It suddenly got me thinking, if we treated everyone as if they were zombies, but we couldn't kill them, we might be better off. In other words, everyone you meet might be a zombie. So you must just steer clear of them however you possibly can. I think
a drastic coping mechanism. I think, but do what you got to do, GZ.
You don't agree?
I also think if there wasn't a zombie apocalypse and it was the slow kind of zombies, like the Walking Dead sort of zombies or Day of the Dead, if you get bitten by that, especially before there are massive herds of them, when they're just popping up in people's houses, you just move. I'd fuck with it. I'd prod it. I'd wave my hand in front of its face and then pull it away, like when you do that thing with either side of your cat.
Yeah, the slow zombies. But if they were the fast ones, like from World War Z.
Yeah, the 28 days later World War Z zombies, then you fuck. Then everyone's fucked, so what's the point of even trying? I'd find heroin, try it, and then off myself.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the slow ones, though. I mean, if you treat everybody with at least the suspicion that they could be a zombie, I think you might make very sensible decisions about your own safety. And I'm not being one of those you know, stay safe, stay home people. But I think assume people have no brains, because most people don't. If you look around you, you could see what I mean. Assume most people have malicious intent, or at least a very primal instinct. And I think you won't be disappointed. Like, life makes a lot more sense to you if you just treat everyone like zombies.
And your expectations will be managed as
correct.
Well.
Correct, yeah. You think that that's very unfair, Gord? You think that that's a horrible way to look at the world?
I think it's a little bit pessimistic, GC. I watched a trailer and I'm racking my brain trying to remember what it's called, because I watched it yesterday, a trailer for a movie coming out in the next year or two, upcoming movies trailer, and it's like COVID-23 and people have been in lockdown for 3 years and now it starts becoming like a brain-affecting disease and starting to make people into something like zombies, and they're like herding people into camps. And it's all obviously just supposed to prey on the current climate of fear. But it actually was kind of like, what if a worse version of this was not turning people into zombies, but making them into really sick, not quite mentally functional and quite keen to bite you and spread it?
Yeah, I'm
it would
surprised.
Be bad. A zombie apocalypse would be bad.
I'm surprised we haven't seen more movies like that, actually, or more companies trying to, you know, make the most of our fear and whatnot. Remember when, like, The Purge came out, or rather when there were talks of the world ending, and then all of those doomsday movies came out as well?
Yeah.
Yes. Armageddon, Day After Tomorrow.
But even most recently, like 2012.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I think that came out in 2012, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just still think a slow-moving zombie situation would just never get out of hand. They wouldn't outnumber you. If you've just got to break their head or shoot them, you could shoot them, stop in front of them, just sort of lightly move while you reload, catch them all.
The slow ones, I'm not scared of those ones. But I didn't... and you're right. You could probably taunt them quite easily. Like, you could prod them with a stick and push them over,
because
they
pick
also
pick up a rock and throw it over there. They'd all go, and we go over there and catch five more of it.
Why do these zombies now sound like Scooby Doo?
It doesn't just have to touch you; it has to grab you and bite you. So even if it sort of gets you, just be like, no. Like, they're so slow, you could crawl between their legs and kick them in the bum. I watch that every time, and these things are just like, you can power walk faster than that thing can go. So just, okay, guys, zombies are coming, everybody. Power walk. Okay, good, guys. I think we've done about 3Ks. That should give us about 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay,
make the fire again. Let's eat.
God, that's great.
Yeah, I wouldn't survive a time like that. I think
in a zombie apocalypse, Sia, you would be fed to them straight away because you'd be a massive liability.
No, what I think if we ever came to those times, Gord, please call me up. Okay. I'll take heroin with you. It will be a great, sweet moment between you and I. And we're done.
Heroin,
all sorts of stuff we never did in life.
You're not going to mess around, Sia. You're going straight for the hard stuff, huh?
Take heroin, lose my teeth within a few hours, and then I'm dead by the end of the day.
We've got a couple of listeners having a conversation about, starting with David, asking if I've tried vaping blunt before. Far more effective, far more efficient, more healthy, etc. I have tried it. It's like breathing air through a filter made of wet lettuce and grass, but not like weed, like actual lawn grass. It tastes very bad, and it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I see those products are quite popular in America.
People dig them, and it is healthier for you, and some people are all about vaping and the rest. It's just, I don't know, like an old school blend, thanks.
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
If it's the zombie apocalypse and you're going to get to try a few things before you get you off yourself, don't like skip the vape weed. It's a letdown. Go straight to like the heroin and the crack.
Yeah, I think that might be a good idea for Sia. I'm going to try and survive a little bit longer. I'm going to keep my wits about me and see if I can last, especially if they are the slow kind.
You'll power walk.
And then hope that you gather a small group of survivors and that you can be the king in the new era of rebuilding.
Right. That's how I see it all happening. Of course, it probably won't. I'll probably just be eaten. But we'll see. I mean, you never know, right? I wanted to talk about something else. I'm sick of, and I'm sure you are too. I walked past some restaurants on Monday. I told you about this. And I was very disappointed to see how quiet everything is. And obviously that's because the economy's taken a massive hit. But the thing that upset me a little bit more than that was that I saw a bunch of what only can be described, and Bulelo described this yesterday on the show when he talked about this place he stops for coffee, where you've got all those government people who are basically living off our money and they're spending it at restaurants and bars and all the rest of it. I saw some of those kinds of people. You know, you can only, there's something flashy about like a bureaucrat who's never earned that money themselves, but they're just taking it from you as tax. And I saw some of those people at one of the restaurants that I was at, well, walked past on Monday. And I thought about something. I thought there is possibly something we can do to make them behave themselves.
Unleash the zombies.
No. I thought, what if we all stop treating them with anything but contempt when we see them? In other words, if you see government people, and if you know that they're, you know, if there's a minister or something, you actually like, you just give them the middle finger, or as you walk past, you fart, or, you know, there's something that you should be able to do to kind of just let them know that you are not impressed with them as human beings.
I'm with you, except that the people who have to put up with their endless shit need that job. They need the tip. They can't get fired for telling a diplomat to fuck off at a restaurant.
Just,
you know what I mean?
I feel like we need to make it really socially awkward for you to be in government. In other words, you must be embarrassed that you have a government job.
So we should socially ostracize them and make their lives miserable in order to cancel their place in society, Gareth. Is that what you say?
I think so.
We should gather and in numbers be mean to them until they change their ways. I've heard this
because,
approach before.
Because, no, dude, I think, you know why I think this might work? Is because what they crave more than anything, these government guys, is celebrity, popularity, fame, acclaim, all of that. They want that
carbohydrates.
No, dude, but they want this stuff that I've just enumerated now far more than they want money. They don't really want money. They desperately want you to love them. And if you give them nothing but contempt, I think less of those kinds of people will go into government, or maybe they'll steal less, or maybe they'll just disappear completely. And perhaps this is a fool's errand, but I just can't help thinking it might be worth giving it a try.
Well, I will do my part in socializing less with government types.
No, I don't mean socialize with them yourself, because none of us are doing that anyway. But when you see them at a table, like, just give them a dirty look or middle finger if you're particularly aggressive. I mean, I don't agree that you should be unpleasant to strangers, because you've got to know for a fact that these are government people. But maybe you can just make it a little bit less pleasant for them. In some way, the opportunity might
coron
arise.
Them lightly. Light coroning.
Light coroning, yeah.
Yeah, it's like coron, but with a bit less salt.
A light coroning, yes, I agree. Salty. That's a good way. That's a good description. I like that. I don't know. I mean, I haven't really figured out the details of this plan yet, but almost if, you know, when a blue light brigade goes past me, I always give them the middle finger. Always. Because I'm like, fuck you. You don't own the road. You work for us.
Oh, jeez.
And then once, it
Nikita
wasn't even.
Points out that this would...
Yeah?
Sorry, I thought you were done with that.
No,
point,
no,
but
no.
She points out that basically this is doing what they want and giving them attention. You got to. This is my thing for when stuff sucks. Just try and completely ignore it.
Yeah, I know.
Like the news.
I don't know. I once put my finger up and went, fuck you, to the blue light brigade that went past. I don't know who it was in there or whatever. And the one cop was like, fuck you too. And he drove past like really aggressively on his bike. And I thought, well, that didn't achieve anything. But it made me feel better.
When I lived in Cape Town for 3.5 years, I lived very close to Parliament, like literally right, like less than a block from Parliament. So my apartment building would always get blocked off whenever they did State of the Nation or anything. Like, it was a mission to get in and out. But other than that, like coming down the Vol Drive straight to Parliament past my house, blue light brigades almost every day. And it's like, it's not a big event. There's just some dude who works there going to Parliament, but he needs like 6 BMWs. Mm. It's like, I understand one security motorbike if you're a high-ranking politician going to work.
Right.
No, three behind, three in front.
And, you know, we can justify it and perhaps understand if there is a security threat or if you are the Minister of Foreign Affairs. The Minister of Forestry and Water.
Yeah, trust me. Nobody cares.
Fisheries.
No one's trying to murder
Minister of Tax.
No.
Who's out to really get them? No but one. Also...
Look, there are weird people in the world, and I don't know what the security situation is. And maybe our politicians are so hated that they need massive amounts of security. Maybe that's part of the reason that they do. I don't know. But here, like Sia is saying, I think it's Sia, make it awkward for them. If you see them at the shops and you work in the shop, serve or treat them last. In other words, get everybody else and deal with them first. So, oh, hi, ma'am, to some nobody. And then make sure that the minister is treated last and worst. Ruth says...
Yeah, I'm just going to keep ignoring them.
Ruth says it is such a waste of taxpayers' money, but that is this government's modus operandi. Nikita says by doing that, you're giving them what they want, which is attention.
Mm.
I suppose that plays into what Gord says.
I was actually quoting our Nikita.
Mm. Gord, would you purchase already rolled blunts if they were available to buy with any flavor of your choice? That's from Courtney.
No, Courtney, because I roll back knees like the one that I just rolled now on the show, and I can do them blindfolded on the back of an off-road motorbike. But I do know that sells very well in Holland. They come in like a little recyclable cardboard box, very handy. And I know that I've got friends who would happily buy pre-rolled blunts if they were not sketchy.
Hmm.
But when people zol, they put saliva on
their paper.
That's why when someone else's, I roll my own.
See,
it's therapeutic. It's part of the mission.
I love that. That's so great.
And also, rolling is a barrier between chain smoking constantly and every now and again having to stop and roll.
Mm.
Not even in corona times, but just the thought of someone else's saliva is a little icky.
It is gross. Hey, tonight on...
I think there's a time and a place for someone else's saliva. Let's not go throwing out entire categories of things.
Before we get to Brett, who's going to join us in a minute, let me just tell you about what's on the show tonight. So What Now is on ENCA this evening at 8:30. We have a panel including... Gugu Letu, who's the principal of the Oprah Winfrey Academy for Girls. And we're going to talk a little bit about education because obviously the Matrix have had a terrible year. And there have been more leaks of exam papers in the last couple of days. So the Matrix are really having a shit time of it. And we decided we'd get a little panel together. It includes Gugu Letu, who's from the Oprah Winfrey Academy. And then we've got someone called Honse, who is one of the best matric pupils of last year. She's actually studying medicine at UCT this year. We asked her about her opinions on matric and on education generally. She had some pretty controversial things to say. And there's a guy called Robert, who is also an expert in education. He's even got his own foundation that he started, which is very much involved in technology and how technology can improve education. So that's the panel this evening. And then we've got Noor bin Laden, who is the niece of Osama bin Laden. And she really is an extraordinary woman. She's a writer. She's lived this extremely interesting life. And obviously, having an uncle like that tends to make life a little more curious, let's say. So we talked.
You've got an uncle in the terrorism business. Uncle Osama.
Yeah. That's him. But what does she call him, Sia?
OBL.
OBL.
It's not uncle. I don't know you. It's OBL. But let me also punt it like this. Just specifically watch that interview for a comment Gareth makes, easily like two questions in.
Oh, did you whip a zinger, GC?
Oh, I said to her, I said, you better make sure you're on time for a plane, because imagine them announcing on the intercom in the airport, attention, please, passengers, could in bin Laden, please hurry to gate number 14. We are about to close for boarding. That's gate 14 and in bin Laden. Can you imagine everybody going, oh, Jesus, in the airport? Yeah.
Exactly. No, I'm not laughing at that because it's insensitive.
All right, well, Brett Cohen's here.
Look, she even chuckled. She chuckled at it, so it was fine.
Hey, Brett, how are you doing, man?
I'm well, and you, Gareth, how's it going?
Lekker, man. Lekker, lekker, lekker.
Super. Singing Sia, how are you?
Dude.
Oh, Brett.
I recorded that jingle there. It's going to be my dial tone on my phone when I've worked out how to do it.
I'm ready to also like record the waiting tone as well when people are on hold.
I think all four of us should sort of do a sort of Bloodhound Gang Hooray for Boobies close off at the end of the show.
All right, we can do that.
Are you ready?
Well, are you going?
Yeah, likewise, mate.
All right, Brett, it's time for the alternative. Each week we take an alternative look at things, just like alternative viewpoints. The gas company is into alternative energy, and Brett's he's the boss there. He's the CEO. It's his business, and you can find out more about the gas company online, but we'll also put all the links up on cliffcentral.com. So, Brett, I know you're a fan of technology, and I know you pay a huge amount of attention to all kinds of things technological. But today, it's worth expanding that into the world of cryptocurrency. And we're talking about Bitcoin at a price of $19,232, which is almost at those highs that we had a couple of years ago, where everybody flocked onto the internet and bought Bitcoin and then sat with it for a couple of months, hoping it would get back to where it was. A lot of people sold, and they sold too cheap. But now, it looks like Bitcoin is rallying again, and people are excited, man. Why are you excited about Bitcoin?
Well, so the whole blockchain technology thing, the sort of the concept that it brought to the party, which is effectively the ability to have a shared database, which all the members, all the nodes in the database can agree on without a third party having to look after it. So you've got no need for a government or a bank or some kind of third party human institution to validate or verify the results. The sort of system takes care of itself. It is profound in terms of being able to do all sorts of things on the internet without having to have a third-party mediator. And we know the risks of third-party mediators.
Not just a third party, because this is where I think a lot of people get it wrong, but an objective, non-authority third party, because you know the problem with banks or with governments or with anyone else, it is open to human corruption, obviously,
right?
And humans love to have control over other humans, and they will do terrible things to hold on to that control. And I think many of us are just so jaded and cynical about the way that the world is run that we would love to have we'd even abdicate responsibility to the machines, which is mostly what I think this is about. And we would rather have the machines make these decisions for us. And by investing in Bitcoin or by taking an interest in the blockchain, I suppose many of us are just saying we're done with humans. Like, we'd rather trust the algorithms to figure this stuff out for us.
Well, I think one thing's certain, there's no doubt that if you centralize money and you give the control of the centralization of the money to human beings, there's going to be corruption. Hands down, it's done. There's no discussion around that. It's obvious. Mm. One of the things we're already putting in place to try to control that is some kind of technology and some kind of oversight. So you have a scenario where sort of the cops are watching, there's just this recursive thing because nobody can trust anybody.
Right.
So you're already there to a large extent. What the blockchain is, takes away the need for any human interaction. The system is self-sustaining. It can literally guarantee that whatever the version is of the blockchain that's official at the moment, at least 51%, a majority of the blockchain, will agree that that's the correct version. And so you have consensus, and so you can safely assume those numbers are correct. It won't change tomorrow. The cost of modifying the blockchain once it's been written is just so high that the value proposition disappears. And that's kind of the basis of it.
So let's just talk about whether or not you think that this is a sustainable that we're in for a massive amount of growth in this way of doing things and the way of decentralizing money. And although we've had these discussions for, what, 5 or 6 years now, at least, in a serious sense, there are a lot more people talking about it now than ever before. What do you think this means for normal currencies? I mean, this is entirely the kind of conversation I'd like to have with my friends around the dinner table. It's the kind of
100%.
Stuff. It's the kind of stuff we talk about. Sorry, Gareth. You know, when we're having a drink, and I wanted to know what you thought of this.
Spot on. That's exactly what I want to talk about. And trying to sort of bet or
forecast.
Wager with Bitcoin is a mug's game. It's a dangerous game. I don't know where it's going to go. It could go back to 3,000 next month. It could go to 30,000. It could go anywhere. That's speculation. I'll leave that to the folks that are running the world. The fiat currency as we have it today has an interesting history, and I'd like to go over the history just very, very quickly.
Sure.
Because there's a lot to unpack over there. Our understanding of money, everything about money, there's a lot to talk about. Before I get onto that, there's two books that any listeners interested in this need to read, in my opinion, that really sort of are informative around money. The one is, I've got it in front of me. Yeah, it's called Debt, the First 5,000 Years. Read it. It's by a fellow named David Graeber. He's a professor somewhere. He's an anthropologist. So he gives you the history of sort of money in a broad sense, like loans, honor, trust, the whole thing, not just physical coins that float around in a medium of exchange. And he really goes into it in a lot of depth. And he sort of dispels the myths around it. Like, we started off bartering eggs for chickens, and then the shoemaker started making shoes. So we took 3 chickens and 2 eggs, and we gave a pair of floppies. And so the sort of thing moved on. And he dispels all of that. That's never really how we've worked. But there was always money in every society in some form or another.
Yeah.
That's one book. It's worth reading. Another book that needs to be read is called The Ascent of Money. It's by a fellow by the name of Niall Ferguson, also a professor somewhere at Cambridge or something. Also a very interesting read, much more modern and much more involved in what we're going to discuss today, talking about sort of the movement of money since kind of the more or less when the Spanish were in control in the 1600s, all the way through to where we are pretty much today, to 2008. The book was published in 2008 during the crisis.
In the book Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari, it touches on the history of, is it a similar story?
It like, is.
Are they aligned more
they
or less?
Are, in, they are certainly.
In Sapiens, he just touches on it as a part of the book. It's not what the whole book's about, obviously, but he gives it a pretty good synopsis, and I found it very interesting.
100%. They certainly align. Sapiens is an unbelievably good book. It's a very well, the way that I can sort of transfer information succinctly is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's similar.
He's a very good storyteller. But I'm curious about both of these books. You know, there's so many books out there about, like, starting a business, or it's, you know, this one who's got the keys to success, or, and most of those books are bullshit. What is it that drew you to these? Because they don't sound to me like self-help books, and I hate self-help books. These sound like they explain the story of money.
I'd really be a strong backer of self-help books if they worked, but really they help they self-help the person who publishes them.
Correct.
So I think it's a good business model, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think it's going to do anything for you if you try to read it.
Right.
Starting with Dale Carnegie all the way through, it's a bit of a sham. These books are literally, I don't know, I think I'm quite interested in sort of human, I think anybody who watches humans behave, like you were alluding to earlier in the show, you sort of, and you start thinking all these humans are pigs, and you know, if you just think of them as zombies and you think they'll let you down, you can move forward from there. I think it's a natural progression to go, well, has it always been that way? And how do we sort of change it? And is it necessarily that way? Can it change? And in the natural world, was it different? Is this a function of globalization? Is this a function of urbanization? All of these questions start to pop into your head. And so you've got to read the history and find out how it worked before and find out from people that, oh, that's, you know, a lot of this isn't recorded.
Can I just stop you there?
On how the world worked before, but
I want to stop you because, first of all, it broke up just while you were explaining that point. But second of all, you are wearing the loudest shirt I've ever seen in my whole fucking life. What is that shirt?
That's just a start. There's more where this came from. The shirt is,
dude,
I don't know where I got it.
No, mate, don't go changing. That's helping me stay awake on this.
I'm here for you, Gord.
The show is always about 4 hours earlier than it needs to be. And that shirt, I need one for the wall next to my little computer's desk. So that
I'm with you.
It's like smelling salts for the eyes.
I've been told I'm pretty boring sort of in delivery of my information. So I figured I'd spice it up with like some nice shirts and sort of, and the jingle from last week really sort of got me going. Yeah.
Where do you
It's a good strategy on the spicing things up, but you do realize we're almost entirely an audio medium.
But we're talking about it, you know, and that's the important part. Next time people are going to go, no, you know what, Gareth Cliff, screw that. I want to watch the Gareth Cliff show because this guy is next level.
Where do you even get a shirt like that?
I got it. It's a funny story. I got it overseas because we went on holiday, me and Beth, and we got there and we went to a formal restaurant. And I'd only packed jeans and t-shirts, so I wore one of her shirts. I wore one of her shirts and I'd had a couple of drinks. It was mildly uncomfortable. And it also made me keep sort of feeling around for pieces I didn't have, which was weird. On the way out, we kind of walked past, you know, all these resorts have got little sort of things in there. And we walked past there and Beth bought the shirt for me and sort of said, right, you're not wearing my clothes anymore. You're freaking me out.
All right, so I've distracted you though, so let's get back.
We have sidetracked so much.
So you reckon that digital currency will eventually overtake the paper money that we use and the old form of kind of writing stuff down in a ledger?
Guaranteed. It's a done deed. The question is whether it's going to be distributed, publicly owned, open source sort of. Money, or whether it's going to be government-controlled blockchains. That's really the only question. The Chinese are very, very, very advanced already in their digital yuan. America's busy looking at it. The European Union has got the digital EU coming out. There's absolutely no doubt that that currency, as we understand it now, will move onto the blockchain for a number of reasons. The blockchain benefits government almost as much as it benefits the individual because it's open, it's transparent, and it eradicates to a large extent the need for banks. If we look at the crisis that we've got at the moment, where the banks are sort of buying money, or the government is effectively printing money, not ours, but a lot of governments in the world are printing money, giving it to the... So they print money on the one hand, and they issue bonds on the other hand, the same government, depending on whether you believe that the Federal Reserve or the central bank belongs to government. But the government itself is issuing bonds, and then it's printing money out of thin air. Mm-hmm. And then it's using a mediator, the bank. And it buys the bonds through the bank. So it gives the bank the money, and then the bank gives it its own bond back. And this is how money is generated. That's what quantitative easing is. The Japanese started it sort of in the 90s, and many, many countries have done it. And certainly Europe and America are doing it left, right, and center at the moment. That has an inflationary impact. You've got to believe. You've got to believe if there's $100 circulating today and there's $200 circulating tomorrow, then the value of the dollar is halved. You've got to, the buying power of the dollar is halved, or more or less halved. You've got to believe that. So there's that problem, but there's also the problem that we're seeing right now where they're printing this money, issuing it to the banks, but the banks aren't owned by the government. Banks are private institutions. They've got their own ideas of where that money should go.
Sure.
And so the money's not always getting into the individual's hands. It's not always getting to where it's supposed to be destined for. Often it's being invested back into the stock market like we're seeing at the moment. And so instead of seeing inflation, what we're seeing is stock prices rocketing through the roof. We're seeing a Dow Jones at 30,000 and an American economy that's decimated. There was a headline that I saw, it was a Twitter sort of feed where I saw that I think it said 30 million jobs, 30,000 Dow Jones. 30 million jobs lost, 30,000 on the Dow Jones, something to that effect.
Yeah, so in other words, you've got a total disconnect.
That's the word to use. The stock market is disconnected from reality. And so you're speculating on the stock market. There's no ways you can invest in the stock market at the moment and be right or wrong because... What are you founding your assumptions on?
Yeah. But you see, doesn't it all boil down to an idea of what value is? Like, where is value best stored? And we have these conversations all the time. And that's you're holding up the book, the debt book. What do they say about that? What does that author say?
He says a lot. It'll be quite difficult to distill in the amount of time that we've got over here, but effectively it comes down to, as the book alludes to debt. In the modern world also, money is generated, money is created out of debt to a very large extent. Money is created, new money is generated through fractional reserve banking. So the banks have, if a bank has $100 on deposit, they're allowed to loan out 90 of those dollars to other people. So they've given you for $90, they've got $10 still in the bank account and $100 on the balance sheet. And if you four pull your $90, then there's a problem because the banks you've taken your $90, given it to another bank, they've fractional reserved it and fractional, and you have a run on the bank. Like we had, I think it was Sambo or something we had in South Africa.
At Sambo, but the famous one was obviously Lehman Brothers in New York.
Right. So there's always sort of.
What's that, Gord?
You said Sambo is another one of those brands. I was talking earlier about like beloved South African brands that have disappeared.
Yeah.
Like Bears and Sambo. Please continue.
I think Bear still existed. I think a lot of the banks sort of got swallowed up by Absa, who's done a pretty good job of destroying
United. Hang on. I also think Bear still exists. How come you and I think Bear still exists, Brett, and nobody else does? Sia thinks it's definitely gone, but I think Bears are still around. I think Bears really cares about you.
Bears furniture.
Yeah, I think Bears are still around. I can't speak for Sia. I think Gordy might be rolling too many blunts in the morning, doesn't see Bears when he drives past it. So
okay.
It's still around. I miss seeing Bears. But Absa was United, Forks Cuss, probably Sambo.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize.
Yeah, Absa was I think the A is for amalgamated. It was an amalgamation of
amalgamated banks of South Africa.
Sia, what did you?
Anyway,
hold on a second. Sia has an important update. Sia has an important. Here's an update from Sia. Go ahead.
Yes, I apologize. Bears still exist. There are a couple of branches specifically in Johannesburg, and they even have an online catalog.
Sure.
So Bears really does care about you.
At least they know that we also care about them.
Yeah.
It was such a topic for today's show. We really care about Bears. Has anyone ever gone to them and just been like, we care also, guys? Like, back at you. We got you, Herbie.
Shut up, Gord.
We are being sidetracked.
Oh,
okay.
My God. Sorry.
Can we please get back?
Brett, back to you. Thank God. Oh.
No, where were we? I can't remember. Gord, give me a lead on change.
No, we were talking about debt. And you were saying
the disconnect between stock markets and real value.
And you were explaining to us how debt is, it creates this run on banks if people decide to suddenly withdraw their money. And there's this basic trust between the bank, who's allowed to loan out, 90% of their balance sheet. And then if those people who've borrowed that money suddenly cash it out and they take it out of the banks are left with a bullshit story, effectively, which means it all collapses.
Right. Their finger up their asses. The point I'm trying to make over there is that that's how money is generated. Money is generated out of debt, because you go to the bank and you borrow money from the bank to buy a car or to buy a house or whatever. And that's why part of the reason why cars are such a very, very, very important part of the modern sort of economy is because cars are a large part of where debt gets created, where you need to go borrow money from the bank. They made it so easy. You don't even know what you're doing anymore. It's all done for you. You literally just walk into a store site. Document, the car gets given to you and the money gets taken out of your bank account every month. And that's part of what keeps the global economy going. So it's quite an important part. So money, to a large extent in the modern economy, is generated out of debt. There's a movie called The 97 or something, which alludes to the fact that certainly in Britain, physical money, notes and coins and that sort of stuff, is only 3% of the fiscus. Everything else is just a number on a ledger or on a database in the banking system.
Unbelievable.
To get back to the point that I was trying to make around the blockchain and Bitcoin technologies and the governments wanting to have control over that, is that if we have a look at what's going on with QE at the moment, you can remove the middleman. The banks could potentially give the money directly to you in your cyber wallet. They're not going to call it cyber. They'll have a different name for it. They're going to give it directly to you in your cyber wallet, and they can cut out the middleman. So they can still do a quantitative easing of some sort so that they can control the economy, which they believe that they can do. But they can do it without necessarily giving it to a third party who is not necessarily completely aligned to their causes, whatever that may be. So the digital technology will, digital currencies will definitely become the standard in the next 20 years. There's absolutely no doubt whatsoever in my mind. The challenge now is how much of that is government controlled and how much of that is controlled by the people. Because certainly the governments are not going to be that keen on having currencies that are controlled by the people. And we'll have to see where the people land on this.
Yeah, well, look, we've got to keep an eye on this stuff, and that's one of the reasons that we do this feature once a week, is to kind of keep an eye on what the alternatives are.
Yeah.
If fiat currency hasn't been working for most people on Earth for the longest time now, or if we can find a better way to manage money, then that's something worthy of discussion. It's called the alternative for a reason. And Brett Cohen, it's good to see you again, my friend. Good to
chat
to you. You want to find
keep
out more?
Real, Brett.
Yeah, very good.
Cheers.
You want to find out more about what Brett's business does? They are called The Gas Company. I'll give you two guesses, Sia. What do you think they do? And no, it isn't farts.
They are a company
mm-hmm.
that works with gas.
You know what? You're 100%
General
right.
Automotive Systems?
No. No, just gas, Gord. As in...
Gift services?
Mm-mm. No. Gas for the home, gas for your business, gas for appliances, all that stuff. You can go and find out more. Just go to cliffcentral.com and you'll find out everything you need to know.
All right. And sediment.
Very good. No, you're still not getting it, Gord. We've just explained it, and you're choosing not to listen.
I was sitting so hard trying not to make another juvenile comment, but I wanted to say we're eventually going to have cards with Bitcoin on them, and then you to any bears in the world, and it just has the price of the couch in Bitcoin, and you tap it, and it's like universal. But then I thought, no, it's rather let's talk about seriously.
Are you still thinking about bears?
That's basically
I'm still the bestle around, but I actually like wanted to talk more about other brands that we forgot have gone away, because we discussed like the chips you used to get and how Ghost Pops went away, came back, how Creoles were so gross, but that was what was good about them, and then they reintroduced them less gross and it didn't quite pan out. There's also like loads of shops that have closed down and stuff, but I thought Bears was one of them and I was wrong. Apologies to the people at Bears. I'm sure it's a wonderful place to shop still, and I'm very glad they still care about me.
I'm shocked they are.
But imagine you wanted to open a store that sells actual bears, and you were like, now the trademark's in dispute.
I am certain the animal rights people will be on your back for that.
Well, I don't know. In countries like Russia, you could probably buy bears, actual like wild bears. Shit. Yeah.
Well, anything where elephants or bears are doing like entertainment-y stuff or, you know, worky things, it's just like, oh, it's horrible.
Well, Russia's an entity on its own. Yesterday, I was reading about how they locked up a bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
Jehovah's Witnesses. There we go. It was like some large clamp down, and I don't know why, but Putin had instructed it.
Russia is a very strange place, man. Russians are all crazy, and they it just seems to me like it is still the wildest place on earth. I've told you before, you think you could book a bachelor's holiday in Russia and they'll let you like shoot any gun that's ever been made. You can go out into the wilderness and you can drink yourself into complete stupor and only wake up a week later, and the Russians will be like, ah, welcome back, not an issue.
And then in MMA, there's like the Dagestanis. Like every single one of them is just born able to kill you. Dagestan. It's a country part of the former Soviet Union. And they're like part of the sort of Islamic area of Russia. And they're beset on all sides by East European countries that dig to go to war with each other. And it's this mountainous nation where everything's just up high in the mountains. So, and they're just like absolutely prodigal at all things to do with wrestling and kicking your ass. So every time like a new Dagestani fighter enters
and that's
the UFC,
just the,
mate,
that's just the
like,
women. Right. That's just the women. The men are even more dangerous.
This dude's definitely going to kill everyone. Like he's had zero fights in the UFC. We don't know much about him, but he's from Dagestan. So he's the betting favorite against this veteran who eats people for 10 years.
Yeah.
Like that makes him like Khamzat Chimaev. Well, I think he's actually Iranian, but he's part of that camp. And then there's obviously Khabib Nurmagomedov. Like, they've got hard bastards in Russia, and these are among their hardest of bastards.
And okay, so here it is specifically, the Jehovah's Witnesses story. So in Russia, they are classified as extremist activities. So being a Jehovah's Witness is an extremist activity.
Yeah.
So right now, what is currently happening is authorities have opened a new criminal case into Jehovah's Witnesses in Russia. And the religion's management center had illegally resumed its work. So there they are going around door to door, knocking and saying, can I talk to you about our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? And then they get clamped down.
Look, I don't agree with locking up people in religious groups. The whole law thing they're doing is not my vibe, but it is quite extreme and a little bit intrusive to go and knock on people's doors and make them talk about your religion. It's like you're bringing it into their home. It's not a bomb and it's not a machine gun, sure, but like, it's extreme to come and try convert me in my house or just outside my house.
Just arrive in your, every time you think it might be Jehovah's Witnesses, go to the door in your underpants and they'll soon get the idea. They'll soon leave you alone.
To listen to the word of our Lord and Savior, Slipknot. You listen to the two whole albums and I'll read two whole chapters later.
Yeah, that's a good deal. I mean, make it fun. You're stuck at home anyway during lockdown. You may as well entertain the Jehovah's Witnesses. They've had a rough year as well. They haven't been able to ply their trade from door to door.
Oh, my God. They have had the worst year ever. The Russians are arresting them in Eastern Europe, and the whole world is not allowed to knock on anyone's doors. Do you think they're writing letters?
And I think, isn't Serena Williams also a Jehovah's Witness? She hasn't had the greatest year on the tennis court either. So they've really had it. They've had the worst year.
I don't know if she is, but I know the Jacksons famously are.
Yes, the Jacksons. And well, I mean, they've lost Prince, a lot of them too.
Prince was also a Jehovah's
Witness. I do remember, though, there was a kid when I was in primary school who had to sit out all of, like, anything. Because, you know, you do Christmas stuff every Christmas and Easter shit every Easter. He had to sit all of that out because he was Jehovah's Witness. And obviously now, because he's different and has to go sit by himself every couple of lessons, all the other kids were horrible to him. And I remember feeling it was like one of those horrible things for primary school because kids are terrible. Oh, they're born innocent little angels. There are no bad people. Only the world corrupts them. No, kids, everything's mine. They like hit each other and you'll just torture a, like 10-year-old for being not allowed to do Easter.
Oh, Serena Williams is a Jehovah's
Witness.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
Did you also know that you can't have oral sex as a Jehovah's Witness?
That's the main reason I'm not one. But I mean, from what I understand from the ladies I do spend time with, a lot of men can't have oral sex as it is, so they might as well find salvation.
Listen to this.
If you get a bad performance, you ask, are you by any chance a Jehovah's Witness? It seems you can't really have oral sex.
What? Wait, okay. So they also can't, well, I knew this, they can't have life-saving blood transfusions.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought it was surgery in general. I didn't know this. Jehovah's Witnesses are unable to vote.
But that must be because, like, they don't allow themselves. I'm sure they're not politically disenfranchised.
They cannot date without chaperones being present, and they
but
are forbidden
from having.
But
now you're talking about the very strict ones. I mean, there are obviously those watered down versions, you know, where people are like, "Oh, but mum, dad, I just want to go on a date with my boyfriend. I've been dating him 10 years. Just can we not have a chaperone today?" They're like, "Oh, all right, just this once."
And they're like Jehovah's enthusiasts. They haven't necessarily witnessed firsthand, but they've heard the stories.
Yeah, they're just enthusiasts. That's a good point.
Yeah, and on the oral sex thing, they can't have oral sex both in and out of marriage.
Oh,
I don't think anyone has oral sex inside of marriage, but still.
Is that why you aren't married?
Courtney, listen to this. Courtney says she was once a sports instructor on a Russian summer camp. And one night we had a talent show, and all of the 12-year-old Russian girls did a full strip show for us.
Jeez.
Russia's rough, man. Russia is so rough.
I've got a bunch of East European homies. They're not necessarily specifically Russian, but they're hard guys. But once they dig you, like, rather have be friends with your Eastern European community members than not be friends with them. Because once they like you, they're super nice, but everything's like on the respect. Don't come in my shop, give me shit. What is this?
Yeah. Cool. Honor. It's all about honor.
Serbians and Macedonians, and they're cool people. Once they accept you, they're great. But if they don't, they're terrifying.
All right, that's all your time
if there for. If there are Serbians and Macedonians in your community, you want to rather be friends with them.
No, I agree with you.
And that means, being respectful and paying for your round and saying hello when you see people and that kind of thing.
If they get any idea that you don't respect them or you don't respect their traditions or their culture, they'll kill you.
I'm very impressed when they introduce you to one of their homies and you know how to say his name.
Yeah.
Because East European names aren't that hard. They just got a bit of a pronunciation to them. No, but I do have some very cool. They're tough guys, though, but they're super cool.
Well, that's all we got time for this morning, and we will be back tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock, bright and early. But this evening on ENCA at 8:30, you've got to watch our latest episode of So What Now. It's going to be a real humdinger. Take a watch, take a look, and we will see you tomorrow early in the morning, 6 o'clock. Thank you, Gordo. Cheers. We'll see you. Cheers, Sia, and most especially, cheers to you. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch up tomorrow. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com